Yakta Sabhavasya. Who has given up his natural position of being equal to everyone. Grinehe. Most abominable. Maya. Under the influence of the illusory energy. Vanokashaha. Behaving exactly like an animal in the jungle. Bhajantam. Unto the devotee who is engaged in devotional service. Bhajamanasya. Being worshipped. Balasya. A child. Eva. Like. Astiratmana. Who is always restless and changing. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has given up his natural tendency of equality toward the demon and demigods. Although he is the Supreme Person, now influenced by Maya, he has assumed the form of a boar to please his devotees, the demigods, just as a restless child leans toward someone. I shall therefore sever Lord Vishnu's head from his trunk by my trident, and with the profuse blood from his body, I shall please my brother Hiranyaksha, who was so fond of sucking blood. Thus shall I too be peaceful. Thus shall I too be peaceful. Purport. The defect of the demoniac mentality is expressed in this verse very clearly. Hiranyakashipu thought that Vishnu also becomes partial, like a child whose mind is not steady or resolute. The Lord can change his mind at any time, Hiranyakashipu thought, and therefore his words and activities are like those of children. Actually, because the demons are ordinary human beings, their minds change, and being materially conditioned, they think that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is conditioned also. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, avajananti mang mudha manushim tanum ashrita. Fools deride me when I descend in a human form. Demons always think that Vishnu can be killed. Therefore, being absorbed in thoughts of Vishnu's form to kill him, at least they have the opportunity to think of Vishnu unfavorably. Although they are not devotees, their thinking of Vishnu is effective, and thus they generally attain Sajuja Mukti. Because the demons consider the Supreme Lord an ordinary living being, they think that they can kill Lord Vishnu as one might kill an ordinary person. Another fact disclosed herein is that demons are very much fond of sucking blood. Indeed, all of them are meat eaters and blood suckers. Hiranyakashipu accused the Supreme Lord of having a restless mind like that of a small child who can be induced to do anything if simply offered some cakes and laddus. Indirectly, this indicates the true position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who says in the Bhagavad Gita, Patrang pushpang phalang toyang yome bhaktya prayachati tadahang bhaktyuparitam ashnami prayatatmana. If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit or water, I will accept it. The Lord accepts the offerings of devotees because of their transcendental love. Because they are in love with the Supreme Lord, they do not eat anything without offering it first to the Lord. The Lord does not hanker for a small leaf or a flower. He has enough to eat. Indeed, he is feeding all living entities. Nonetheless, because he is very merciful and is Bhakta Vatsala, very favorable to the devotees, he certainly eats whatever they offer him with love and devotion. And this quality should not be misjudged to be childish. The highest quality of the Supreme Lord is that he is Bhakta Vatsala. In other words, he is always extremely pleased with his devotees. As for the word Maya, when used in reference to the dealings of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees, this word means affection. The actions of the Lord to favor his devotees are not disqualifications, but signs of his natural affection. As for Rudira, or the blood of Lord Vishnu, since there is no possibility of severing Lord Vishnu's head from his body, there is no question of blood. But the garland that decorates Vishnu's body is as red as blood. When the demons achieve Satyuja Mukti and leave behind their sinful activities, they are blessed by Vishnu's garland, which is red like blood. After attaining Satyuja Mukti, the demons are sometimes promoted to the Vaikuntha world, where they receive the reward of the Lord. Lord's garland prasad. Very difficult to lecture on. This is a verse spoken by Hiranyakashipu. Srila Prabhupada's purpose is, however, very interesting. Namaum Vishnupadaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Simad Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatyade Satarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitana Prabhu Nitananda Shri Advaita Garadha Shivashadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Let us again read the verse of today. Tasya tyakta svabhavasya griner maya vanokasha vajantam vajamanasya balasyevastiratmana. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has given up his natural tendency of equality toward the demons and demigods. Although he is a supreme person, now, influenced by Maya, he has assumed the form of a boar to please his devotees, the demigods, just as a restless child learns and leans toward someone. I shall therefore severe law. So difficult to say these verses because one just cannot feel like this. Here this demon says, I shall therefore severe Lord Vishnu's head from his trunk by my trident, and with the profuse blood from his body, I shall please my brother Hiranyaksha, who was so fond of sucking blood. Thus shall I too be peaceful. It is not possible for the demons to ever be able to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this was particularly evident when Krishna visited Hastinapura to make peace talks with the demon Duryodhana. At that time, Duryodhana thought, this is my chance, and he summoned, that means called, an army to catch Krishna. So Dushasan, that was that powerful brother who once had tried to strip Draupadi naked, Draupadi the wife of the Pandavas, Dushasan at that time came and with a rope wanting to bind Krishna. The logic was, if we can just bind Krishna and just take him away from the Pandavas, they lose all power. This way we win the war. But this time, Satyaki, an associate of the Lord, just drew his sword in order to kill Dushasana, but Krishna captured him and said, no, don't do this. There should not be any bloodshed now. And then, in order to show some of the people his power, he expanded into a partial manifestation of the universal form. So Dushasana, all of a sudden, saw many, many forms. But instead of understanding, maybe this is God, I should be very careful, he was so in illusion that he just stood there with his rope and thinking which of the forms he should bind first. And he became increasingly confused because there were so many arms and heads and everything of the universal form. But he could not really understand that this is Krishna. The Bhagavad Gita tells us that if a devotee, a person who is not austere, but who is attached to money and sense gratification, will always suffer this a problem, that Krishna might be right before his very eyes, but he does not understand and does not develop any relationship with him. Sometimes devotees in the movement for Krishna consciousness feel that after so many years of chanting the holy names, going every morning to see the deity, to have darshan, and associating with devotees and engaging in devotional service, still they don't have any significant realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Many times devotees say this because they don't really count their fortune, as you say in English. Sie sind sich nicht ihres Glückes bewusst. But sometimes also there is a point there that it's not so easy to recognize Krishna and be in Krishna consciousness. And for this, to attain this deeper realization of Krishna consciousness, a very important word is significant. This verse helped Lord Brahma, who was in the darkness of the universe, to have a realization of Krishna and see Krishna finally by a transcendental vision of the spiritual world. This word is, of course, tapa, or austerity. Tapa, or austerity, is the way to cure our material eye disease, so that it is possible for us to recognize Shri Krishna. I was just talking with one devotee yesterday who is fasting in order to purify his blood and his existence. And after I talked to him, I met an Ayurvedic doctor who, by the way, will come today to our Heidelberger temple. He's a very nice devotee of Krishna, very competent. He's the older brother of Satyanarayan Prabhu from Vrindavan, who also treats many of our GBC devotees. This man told me that the greatest source of disease in according to Ayurveda is the, oh, I forgot the Sanskrit, is it anama or something? It's non-digested foodstuffs. Because this foodstuffs, which you eat, and don't digest turns into poison. I think we all know if you leave food for too long, then it becomes schimmelig and then poisonous. This is how something which is not digested becomes the greatest problem. The Ayurvedic treatment therefore tells us in order to be healthy, one should fast from time to time. We in the Movement for Krishna Consciousness fast on Ekadasi, in theory at least. Or if we fast, we do it on Ekadasi, let us say like this. We have a partial fast of no grains and so on. But this undigested food, you can, or this toxic, you can feel it when you do fast, then after some time you develop headaches. Have you noticed it? What this means is that the undigested food becomes released in the bloodstream, and that poison, which is always there in the body, is now free and affects your brain in the form of pain. So it is described that most of our diseases, if not all, stem from this undigested or wrongly digested foodstuffs, which accumulates in the different channels of the body and blocks everything. So to become free from this disease, a very simple method has been given. We have to fast. If we fast, then there's time to digest all this. So our material existence can be also compared to a disease-like existence, because we do not see Krishna. This is an eye disease, or you could also say a disease of the perception. And a similar process has been given, the process of austerity. If a devotee increases his tapasya, he purifies his senses and cures them. Now, the way a devotee performs tapasya is by observing the celibacy, by controlling his mind, and by controlling his senses. Through these three processes, we are basically performing tapasya. We need to become purified in our existence in order to have contact with Krishna, who is the supreme pure. Krishna is described as Paramdharma. Paramdharma. Parambrahma Paramdharma. Yes. Pavitram Paramang Bhavan. Purusham Shashvatam Divyam Adidevam Ajham Vibhum. He's a supreme Brahman, the supreme pure, and he can only be understood through purified senses. Prabhupada once said that if you want to enter the atmosphere of Krishna consciousness, you must in your consciousness develop the same qualities, that is purity. Just like a person who would like to reside on the sun, he must develop a fire body, otherwise on the sun he would just turn into a piece of ashes. Prabhupada said on the sun there are houses and forests all made of fire. So if you want to live in such an atmosphere, it's not possible with this body. You would have to develop a fire body. This is extremely necessary if you want to have that residence. So if you want to reside in Krishna consciousness, we must become free from material contaminations. We must become free from Maya. Otherwise, it just doesn't work. There is this ancient story of Pinocchio, which illustrates a little bit how Maya has polluted us. Pinocchio, I think, was a puppet on a string, but he somehow could walk. And then one day, there were some men who told him and the children that you can, you please come on our boat, and we will drive you to the land where butter and honey and cake is in abundance. Schlaraffenland, so Deutsch gesagt. So they came on the ship, and then they went to this place, and then there was a magician or something. I read millions of years ago this Pinocchio story. At least I remember they were all turned into asses. And they were forced to work very hard. This is what Maya does when we fall into the kingdom of illusion and sense gratification and do not and want to avoid tapasya. We become very interested, for instance, to have different forms of sense gratification. I don't want to be so groovy today, so gross, and describe them all in great detail. You can imagine what it is or what it could be. And then we go towards that, and the result is we just have to work so hard. Just the other day, maybe 3 days ago, I was preaching to someone, and I was bringing a video cassette of our Nityananda tours with me. So we put it inside the TV, but when it was running, we saw the Werbung, the Reklame. Fantastic sect for only the 10 mark and 95. Then the next thing came. This wristwatch shows you the time. You can lie, you can sleep, you can drive a car. This wristwatch is always totally exact. Buy it. It's only 950 marks. Was a very good wristwatch, it seemed. And then I asked this professor, this is very aggressive, isn't it, this advertisement? Yeah, he said, they're getting more and more aggressive. And there are programs where you can just have your material desires incited. You know, people sit before this and they hear and hand, enjoying sounds, and then they become so fascinated. But what they have to do, in effect, is to work hard like asses. They become transformed into asses when they go into this Schlaraffenland of material goods. So tapasya is important. You can decide if you want to become an ass or perform tapasya. In other words, if you want to work hard for material desires or become free of material desires. Sometimes people, and also devotees who become a little old and disillusioned, they think this idea of tapasya is cruel, and they are not for it. They are they just don't like it to get up any longer early in the morning, or to follow the celibacy rules in the Grihastha ashram, or just to live a simple, unassuming life. It just sounds so cruel and so lifeless to them, this type of life. And then they become involved in other activities and other styles of life, but I personally have always seen how they become servants if they give up tapasya, servants of the mind and servants of the senses. At the same time, if you just perform tapa or austerities in your service without a higher taste, then you dry out. It's called nirbija yoga. Nirbija yoga means the yoga which has no life. Such tapasya, which is just, or devotional service, which is just done out of force and big endeavor, is really the nirbija yoga, the lifeless yoga, which cannot really fascinate anyone. You cannot enter Krishna consciousness by the force of tapasya, just like you cannot enter Krishna consciousness by the force of, or let us say, by sense gratification. Krishna consciousness, or to enter Krishna consciousness, means really to engage your senses in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and free yourself from any other designation than just being the servant of Krishna. When you do this, you will be able to enter into the transcendental dimension of Krishna consciousness and will see how your love for Krishna becomes increased. See, Krishna is the all-attractive one. If someone regularly reads about Krishna, hears his holy name, he must become attracted. It must work. It works always. Prabhupada once, he explained it in a very interesting way. I heard it yesterday on a lecture. He said, why are we attracted to this body? Each one of us. We are so attracted to our person. Why? The answer is, there is a soul. And he gave another example. Why are we attracted, for instance, to this building, Center for Vedic Studies? This is most probably the most unattractive building of all of Heidelberg. It's noisy. It's a cage of heat, ein Hitzegefängnis in the summertime. It is beton, which sucks all the energy out of your telotsky, your body. It is it's not meant for living, actually. This is a carpet shop, a teppich shop. It's designed like this. So, why are we so attracted, especially when we are not for long time, when we are not there for a long time? I always, when I'm traveling, I think, oh, Center for Vedic Studies would be so nice to go through the darshan in the morning. It's so nice to meet the different devotees and see everything, everyone. The reason is we are attracted because of the people who live in the building. Imagine this building without devotees and without deities. It would be just totally unattracted. So we are attracted to this body because of the person inside. Why are we attracted to the soul? The reason is because the soul is really a part of Krishna, of Krishna's transcendental existence and transcendental person. So imagine if we are already so attracted to this body, how much we must be attracted to Krishna, because the source of our attraction to this body is Krishna and nothing and no one. be connected with Krishna always and never separated to him. The reason why we are not so attracted at the present moment to the chanting of the holy name and to Krishna in his many different forms is simply because we are so covered. Srila Prabhupada gave the example of the piece of iron which is covered by rust. If a rusty iron piece brought in contact with a magnet, it won't react so much. In the same way, our hearts are covered with the rust of material life, and therefore we cannot really feel that attraction to Krishna so strongly. However, by the purifying process of tapasya, performing some small austerities for the service of the Lord, this covering is removed and our attraction is wird freigelegt, becomes free and visible for each and every, for all of us. So Hiranyakashipu did not do any austerities. He was into money and women, that's all. He was a great money and women lover, ein Schürzenjäger sozusagen, and therefore, because of this, he just had a total wrong understanding of Krishna. He even thought he could kill Krishna and maybe drink his blood. He thought it must be interesting taste. I mean, these demons, when you just feel so bad to even think of their names. Demonsky. So, Hare Krishna, this is all what I have to tell you this morning. What do you think? Tapasya, it's an interesting word, isn't it? We hear it from time to time in a lecture and read it. This afternoon I want to speak about how to increase the taste of chanting for our guests. And I was just thinking this morning when I thought what I would say, that actually at the time of initiation we are also requested to speak of some basic tapasya. Isn't it? We are asked, please follow the four rules and regulations of spiritual life. That's tapasya. The basic form of tapasya. It's necessary, in other words, in spiritual life. Then as we grow up, we do other practices. A mantra will only work when you follow tapasya. Yesterday, some esoterically minded person gave me a book on sound vibration, and in this book, it was just typical. They were speaking about mantras and how much power it has. In the next chapter, they had some tantric forms of sense enjoyment. They had described how to do it. I just, it's kind of like, whoosh, into the next chapter. This is typical. But mantras won't work. I think I have to write the author without tapasya. Just won't work. Dobro, good. Do you have any questions, Vishwadev? Yeah. Forgets. Yeah. Yeah. desire is certainly the driving force of spiritual life. It's actually the only thing the individual soul can come up with. The soul is powerless and dependent for the fulfillment of his desires, either of Krishna or the Krishna. I'm sorry, this English is not so good. What I want to express is that the soul cannot independently fulfill desires. The real function of the soul in this world is really to desire, to build up a desire. And then Krishna will fulfill that desire. It's very, very mystical. You have to, for spiritual life, you have to really work on your desire. This is really our main job, to every day increase our desire, because that's really all we can. We may think we can do this or that, but it's not the fact. We can only desire to do something, and then Krishna can give us, fulfill us a desire. Gaurangi, you came, you didn't hear all the answer. You have to, we are not free to do anything. We can only develop desire, and then Krishna can fulfill that desire. And usually does. So, I feel it is totally natural that when you get older in Krishna consciousness, things become a little bit like a routine or known. Personally, I thought this morning when I came down, everything went automatically. You go to the altar, clang, you throw yourself on the floor, clang, you go up, then you pray your prayer, please give me the strength to serve you today, Gonitai. Then you go plung to the Charanamrita, they give you Charanamrita, then you put the garland around Prabhupada, and then you sing the song. You don't think any longer about Sri Guruji Charanaparam. It goes on automatic pilot. You have done it now, I don't know, 2,000 times. I mean, a lot. You can just rattle it off like your shlokas. I find out whenever I try to remember a shloka and put my intelligence in it, it usually doesn't work so good. I just have to put my mind on blank and then click, do the automatic pilot, and then millions of shlokas are there. But because I think too much, I forget them always. This is how it's natural. It's unfortunate, but it is natural. So the devotee, therefore, naturally uses his desire, loses a little bit of the desire if he is not careful. Therefore, one must bring himself into ever fresh situations of new challenge each day, where one again desires to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. This is a very important practice, and sometimes as devotees get older, they forget to do that. Yeah, someone goes like the deity room. It's confirmed by the ghost in the machine. So this is sometimes what happens, and we really have to avoid this. How to increase the desire? I guess everyone has to learn his own mind and personality and learn how it works. What sometimes works is to just make a walk in the nature and just think deeply about life. Sometimes, but most of the time, really, this is not the primary thing. I mean, have to be careful what I say. You have to read and become always again fascinated with Krishna consciousness, and then your desire came up. Like that one day, where I heard, you can become Krishna conscious in 1 second. I became so strong, full of so much of desire. Yes, that's something for me. This is such a strong desire. You know, this we have to always do this in our life. If we become unflexible, we will get stuck in the routine of life. See, our lives as devotees is different than the karmis. The karmis life is always full of anxiety. Oh, will I get this? Will I get that? And he has such strong desires. I must get this wristwatch for 940 marks. And then, oh, I must get this relationship functioning, and I must get this. These type of anxieties are not there with us any longer, I hope. And so what type of propelling force or driving force will we take? It's only the desire to come to Krishna, to satisfy him. And if we don't work on this consciously, we will get sunk in the muck of the routine and not even think about it. Hare Krishna, that's a typical Sachinandan Swami answer. I think others will give you other answers, but that's what I think. Is that okay, or wolltest du noch was anderes? Ja. Aha, you thought like this. I misunderstood you. Is the accident a cause of premeditation? Or what? What? Yeah. Good. There are several causes of fall down. It was once discussed in our Back to Godhead magazine, and one of the causes is certainly that you see objects, this is now philosophical, objects outside of you whom you had previous contact with, and therefore there is an impression in your consciousness. So when you see this, then desire develops. According to our philosophy, the act of sense gratification alone is not as dangerous as the impression which it leaves, which always takes place, by the way. So this, our mind has these many impressions of previous sense gratificatory activities, and Ajamir saw this lusty scene of two people embraced in a sexual embrace, and this developed in him a desire. He was married actually at that time already, but his wife was a Brahmana wife who kept the four rules and regulations and would not give him sense gratification, and he just saw, oh, this is a desire which I still have. That's one reason for fall down. For Ajamir was just a Brahmana in the Vedic civilization. It's not really described that he was chanting 16 rounds and engaged in a very, like in the Krishna conscious sadhana. So a devotee is sometimes also in the situation that he sees something or hears something which is still in his mind because he is not purified enough, and then he becomes attracted, and after the attraction he goes and he wants to get this object of sense enjoyment. This is one reason of fall down. The other reason which has been given is when a devotee commits offenses against the holy name or against, other devotees or against the deity, then as a result of this, material desires develop in his heart. And then he has a fall down. This is another cause of such an accident. It may look, in other words, accidental, also so zufällig, but it's never zufällig that someone falls down. There are also causes. And the only way to avoid this really is to become conscious of the danger of fall down and to pray to Krishna to be protected. Prabhupada said once, I pray to Krishna that I don't fall down. Once he said to Shivananda Prabhu, please pray that Krishna protects me. And he said to us, your mistake is that you are not sufficiently afraid of Maya. You're not enough afraid. Yeah. Tut mir leid, ich bin heute nicht so auf der Höhe. I'm sorry. Ja. Noch jemand? Andal? Aha. Ja. Aha. Ja. Ich werde das mal in Deutsch beantworten. Ich kann mir nicht vorstellen, dass wir nur hier auf dem irdischen Planeten Karma ansammeln. Ich nehme an, dass der Grund, warum du so denkst, ist, dass wir ja eigentlich immer frei sind, als spirituelle Seelen, uns zu entscheiden. Auf den himmlischen Planeten, soweit mir bekannt ist, kommt eine etwas verzwickte Frage, also ich will das mal hier in die Runde geben. Ich muss ein bisschen darüber nachdenken. Wie ist es? Stimmt es, dass man nur auf der irdischen Planeten Karma ansammelt? Ja. 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 Was besagt das? Gut, also wenn ich mir das so überlege, ich habe jetzt überlegt, während ihr überlegt habt, ich würde sagen, dass generell schon so ist, dass dieser Erdplanet geschaffen ist, wie eine Art, du könntest es vergleichen mit einem Bahnhof, in dem man sich entscheidet, entschieden hat man sich vorher, aber vom Bahnhof aus fährt man in verschiedene Destinationen. Nehmen wir mal den Heidelberger Hauptbahnhof. Man kann nach Rothenburg fahren und nach Basel und auch nach Zürich und nach Darmstadt und Hamburg und so weiter. So ist auch die mittlere Planet eine Möglichkeit, zu verschiedenen Bestimmungsorten hinzugehen. Es ist richtig, der Erdplanet ist richtig dazu gemacht. Denn man lebt hier ja verhältnismäßig kurz. Auf den himmlischen Planeten lebt man ja viel, viel länger. Sagen wir jetzt mal, jemand geht in den Himmel. Sondern qualifiziert sich hier auf der im Bahnhof des Erdplaneten und erreicht dann sein Ziel, die himmlischen Planeten. Da hat er dann sozusagen genauso Ruhe wie ein Reisender nach einer längeren Reisenfahrt. Es gibt jedoch auch dort, also da nehme ich die Antwort, also das ist da in der Antwort von Vishvadev drin, oder in dem Zitat von Vishvadev. Es gibt dort auch Situationen, wo wir hören, zum Beispiel von Halbgöttern, die vom Himmel dann mal eine Reise irgendwohin unternehmen und die dann große Fehler machen und aufgrund dieser Fehler dann leiden. Zum Beispiel die Halbgötter Nala Kuvera und Manigriva waren wunderbar situiert auf den himmlischen Planeten, dann kamen sie aber auf die irdischen Planeten und haben dort in Saus und Braus genossen, Wein getrunken und viele Prinzipien gebrochen und wurden dann verflucht und wurden also sogar von den himmlischen Planeten heruntergebracht. So ist es immer noch möglich, auf den himmlischen Planeten karmische Tätigkeiten auszuführen, die bestimmte Reaktionen mit sich bringen. Karmische Reaktion oder Flüche. Aber allgemein ist es so, dass man da tatsächlich sowas wie eine Endstation erreicht, wo man für eine ziemlich lange Zeit bleibt, jetzt in der kosmischen Zeituhr. Man bleibt ja für riesig lange Zeiten auf den himmlischen Planeten. Nicht? Und da bleibt man normalerweise und genießt einfach das und lebt da ein. Es gibt da zum Beispiel keine karmischen Reaktionen für Tätigkeiten, wo du hier ganz schlimme karmische Reaktionen bekommst. Zum Beispiel trinken die ja dort den Soma-Saft. Das ist eine sehr starke berauschende, ein sehr starke berauschender Trank. Und die haben auch sehr viel Sexualität dort mit vielen Partnern. Werden aber nicht dafür karmisch bestraft. Es gibt dort zum Beispiel keine Krankheiten, wie hier auf den Planeten hier, wo unweigerlich irgendwann mal Krankheiten auftauchen, wenn man ungezügelt diesen Tätigkeiten nachgeht. Es gibt dort auch keine karmischen Strafen. Nicht? Die können das einfach machen. Das ist so eingerichtet als Platz zum Genießen, wo es keine Reaktion auf den Genuss gibt. Nur wenn die ganz wilde Sachen mal machen, zum Beispiel hören wir, wie Indra zum Beispiel plötzlich wild wird und auf die Frauen von Heiligen da, anyways, wir wollen nicht, junge Mädchen, die sollen nicht so da, also, nicht, die tun, also irgendwas Verrücktes macht, zu Deutsch gesagt, das reicht ja, dann ist es so, dass, ja, dann kriegen sie auch die Reaktion auf ihr Handeln zu tun. Ist also nicht sicher, aber allgemein. Nur auf den Himmel, auf den höllischen Planeten, Andal, ist es genau im Gegensatz dazu. Da leidest du einfach nur dein schlechtes Karma ab. Das ist einfach eine absolute Tortur, der man da ausgesetzt ist, die man auch nur durchstehen kann, weil man keinen physischen Körper hat, sondern einen subtilen Körper. Also unterm Strich ist die Antwort, ja, es ist tatsächlich so, wie du denkst, also wie du es dir nicht vorstellen kannst, sagen wir besser, mit einigen Ausnahmen. Du kannst dir das einfach nicht vorstellen, weil du hier auf den irdischen Planeten bist und bestimmte Erfahrungen hast und eine bestimmte Situation, in einer bestimmten Situation lebst. Es ist nicht möglich, sich vorzustellen, wie das auf dem himmlischen Planeten ist. nur genießen. Das können wir uns gar nicht vorstellen. Wir denken zum Beispiel, nur genießen, das ist, muss ja total langweilig sein. Da geht's ja, geht das Leben hier auf monoton über. Ist ja kein Wechsel mehr da. So denken wir uns von unserer irdischen Erfahrung. Und denn das ist so. Stell dir mal vor, du würdest nur Essen genießen. Für eine Stunde würdest du essen, dann für zwei Stunden, drei Stunden. Das muss ja schädlich werden. Irgendwann müsste Lalita kommen und die Steuer. Halt, Kind! Merkst du nicht, dir kommst aus der Nase heraus. Wir müssen dich gleich durchspülen lassen von der Ambulanz, wenn das so weitergeht. Nicht? Wir können uns das nicht vorstellen. So ein permanent das Leben, also permanente Aktivitäten ohne Wechsel, aber auf den himmlischen Planeten, da halten die halt an mit ihrem Genuss und das wird nicht unterbrochen. Das ist schwierig, ich weiß. Ja. Willst du in den Himmel oder lieber zu Krishna, nicht? Ja, kommt noch die Mamushka. Hat sich ergeben. Ja, gut. Jetzt haben wir 9:10 und es ist spät genug, um aufzuhören. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sisi Gonitai ki jai, Gaur Premanandi Adi Adi Bo.